one, two, three. This is Dr. Alex Avila with Love University, and we're back. I'm an author, speaker, and psychologist. Every week we talk about how to love yourself, others, and a higher nature, how to improve your life and your relationships, spirituality, finances, and health. We're at the Miami Book Festival, and we're having a lot of fun with great authors and speakers and writers. And we have a very special guest right now named Susanna Charlson. She's the author of the New York Times bestseller, Scent of the Missing. She's also a flight instructor, service dog trainer, canine search and rescue team member. She has a nonprofit organization called the Possibility Dogs, which rescues, trains, and places dogs with people who are suffering from disabilities. She has her search partner, Puzzle, a golden retriever, Jack Piper, a German Shepherd, and other rabble Pomeranians, Chihuahuas, and even cats. Welcome, Suzanne, to the show.
Thank you so much. It's lovely to be here.
So it sounds like you love animals from what I'm gathering.
I know. And when you read that introduction, I think, well, I think I'm too busy. I have a lot going on.
I know. Now, let me ask you, who is the most loving dog breed?
Oh, the most loving dog breed. I don't know that there is an answer to that because they all love in different ways. They all express their love in different ways.
Yes. I
know from working search and rescue for missing people, I have had really, really good success partnering golden retrievers because I spend so much of my search work searching for special needs missing, particularly Alzheimer's patients, that kind of thing.
Right.
And the people missing, when we find them, respond really well to the Goldens.
Okay.
And the Goldens, with their teddy bear appearance and their universal smiles, also respond very well to people.
I was going to say, I just got a golden retriever last year. So
there
I
you go. So you know that smile.
She's a miniature retriever.
Uh-huh.
Very cute female dog.
Right.
So the key is giving the love as they do, right?
Right.
Now, you've written an interesting book. So you have a book, I think it looks like, How to Rescue People with a Dog, How to Find Them.
Right.
Dogs for Therapy, like for people that have emotional problems.
Right.
And then How Dogs to Find Dogs.
Yes.
So you cover everything.
Yes, yes. Well, and they all led one to another. I mean, the first book, Scent of the Missing, is about working a search dog, but so much, again, of my work is working to find the special needs missing. And that relationship with a population of people that didn't necessarily even know they were lost when they were lost.
When you say special needs, you mean people that have some kind of mental or physical disabilities?
Right. Alzheimer's, dementia, sometimes children on the spectrum.
Okay.
And so, working with that community.
How does the dog find it? I mean, how do you do that?
Well, the dog finds them like the dog finds any human, by scent. So, but what it does mean, what's particular about that group is that sometimes they don't recognize help when it comes for them because they also don't necessarily have good orientation skills. They don't know they're lost.
Yes.
They can't frame rescue the way you or I might.
Yes.
So the dog finds them by scent, but it does take a super special loving dog to make the kind of approach to that kind of missing person that isn't going to scare them.
I see. The way scent, do they smell the dog, the person's shoe, and then tries to find the person based on the shoe?
If you're working on a scent-specific search, yes.
Ah.
Yes, you smell the shoe or the pillow, the clothing.
Yeah, my dog is actually a little too, she jumps, so she's too, she'll probably scare people, I think.
Right.
She wants to kiss you.
How old is she?
She's one, actually.
Right.
Maybe I need to train her better.
That's a golden thing, and it's certainly trainable out of it, but
jump,
yes.
And the one that hug you and stuff.
Yes.
That'll probably scare someone that has a disability. Right?
Well, it's absolutely something a search dog can't do, but it is a common golden behavior they have to be trained to outgrow.
Very enthusiastic, right?
Yes. I love you this much and this tall.
Now, the other thing is, this is where it's really fascinating, dogs for trauma recovery.
Yes.
Now, did you say you had your own personal issues that a dog helped you with?
Well, yes, certainly. After many years of working search, I had some very traumatic experiences in the search field.
Yes.
And I found myself presenting with, I would call it, obsessive compulsive behaviors.
Oh, wow.
And they were typically associated after super, super stressful and in some cases devastating finds.
Right.
And
would you wash your hands 10 times a day?
No. I was, and you know what? I've since learned a lot of emergency responders get variations of this.
Right.
I was obsessively checking that my doors were locked when I left the house.
Oh, I see.
So I was protecting my home.
You're a checker.
Yeah, because I was finding so many people who had lost, you know, irrevocably lost family.
Yes, right.
So,
right.
And you know, and from what I've found out since is, you get a lot of firefighters who obsessively check stoves, mm-hmm. you know, or gas lines, right. or et cetera. So
what is the mechanism you think that the dog's therapy helped you? Like, was it just licking you on the face a lot? Was it playing with you?
Well, you train these dogs. You know, any mental health issue can rise to the level of a disability. Now, mine did not, but I ultimately had a spinal thing where I needed a mobility dog.
Right.
And so, no, you train a dog to specific tasks to mitigate whatever the disability is. So when I ultimately began training dogs for something like OCD, you train the dog to intervene in the behavior. You teach the dog to recognize the behavior and then intervene in it. And sometimes that dog's redirection is enough for someone to go, oh, I'm doing this.
Oh, okay. That's pretty cool.
You know, I didn't realize I was doing this, and now the dog has redirected.
Oh, okay. So I thought they just gave you love and it made you feel better.
Oh,
if you're
depressed. That's an emotional support animal.
Oh,
that's a different thing from a service animal.
Okay. Now,
very
can
much
you
so.
Say that you don't have the money? I heard it's like $30,000 to get one like that, or it's a lot of money.
Right, can be.
Can you just do it by yourself at the house, like you know?
Well, the law does allow owner trained service partners, but it takes training skill. It's not something you can do just randomly.
Right.
And so I always recommend when people are interested in owner training a dog,
right.
to have a trainer, an experienced trainer, help them find the right candidate dog, because not every dog is.
Right.
Is appropriate.
Okay.
And then to work with a trainer to get the desired tasks, because you can't just randomly do it and hope to come out successful. And service dogs, of course, have to be able to not only mitigate the condition or assist with the condition, but also they have to be exemplary stewards in the public.
Right.
You know, they've got to behave appropriately.
So let me see if I understand this. So let's say you're depressed. Isn't your dog naturally a therapist? It comes to you and it comes.
Some are, not all.
Not all. So what do you have to teach the dog to do to be a therapy emotional dog for depression?
Okay, well now an emotional support animal and a service dog are different things, but if you're training a service animal.
I mean, at home, say at home, you know, you're doing the home ownership thing.
Right. Well, again, if you're training the dog to be a service partner that will go with you out in public.
Right.
And to mitigate depression that, maybe presents as an inability to move.
Yes.
You know, a withdrawal to the point that you can't move.
Right.
Then the dog recognizes the behavior. And sometimes they'll guide people outside.
Like nudge you to get out
Yes.
or something? Okay, with their nose.
Yes. There are dogs that are trained to bring leashes to get people who are reluctant to leave their homes to go outside.
So it's more than just emotional support. Like
it's a trained task. It's like redirection.
So it's more behavioral action.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes. Yeah.
I was thinking that they lick you and they cuddle with you. So that by itself releases oxytocin.
Oh, sure. Absolutely.
So that by itself can help you.
So, yes, there is a second benefit for sure.
Yeah.
For sure.
Secondary.
Mm-hmm.
Now, you also say that dogs that are homeless make great therapy animals. Why is that?
Well, they can. Yes, absolutely. The right dog can be a perfect emotional support animal because often they are extremely grateful to have been found, to have a home, and they are very responsive to affection and willing to and eager to give affection back.
Yes, so they're very grateful.
Yes. And so the relationship is a win-win on both sides. But of course, again, it takes the right dog. Some dogs actually, strong human emotion actually makes the dog more anxious. So those dogs are not appropriate necessarily for emotional support animals or service dogs. Sweet dogs, but they're not really prepared for that job.
I see. And you said that a dog helped you heal your relationship with your parents?
Yes. Now, yes, that dog comes into play in my most recent book, Where the Lost Dogs Go, and he is a dog that I rescued from a shelter. I ultimately trained him to find missing pets, so he's pet-specific, he's animal-specific, but the process of bringing him in and training him, he actually reconnected me to my parents, who parted from each other, and also from me. And we had been really largely estranged for many, many years, but this little dog ended up reconnecting us.
So they divorced each other and they separated from you?
Yes. It was a very complicated situation, but right, yes, so and this little dog brought us back together, really, before both of them died a year apart.
Wow. Well, how did the dog do that? Did they go find them or something?
Well, no, they were just, my background with my family had been, we had a strong rescue ethic when I was a child, and they were both very interested in this little dog and his story as I brought him in. And in talking with them about him, we grew closer and closer.
I see what you're saying.
So he became really kind of an icon of reunion, if you will.
It's a beautiful thing. And you know, the unconditional love, I think, of dogs.
Yes, yes.
It's very important.
Yes, and the forgiveness. The forgiveness after pain.
So in other words, the dogs forgive you?
Well, the dog forgives humans. You know, after the dog has suffered hardship, many dogs are willing to forgive humans.
Right.
And then ultimately, that's a lesson in forgiveness we can bring
to
the other
humans. If someone beats the dog and then they get a new owner, they're not going to be angry at the new owner.
Well, we don't know. I mean, again, every dog is unique. But yes,
generally, there's forgiveness, you're saying.
Many dogs, yes, are capable of a level of forgiveness that humans can aspire to.
That's beautiful. Now, they also use a term called magnet dog. Is that the dog that attracts other dogs?
Yes.
How does that work?
A magnet dog is just one whose personality is very non-threatening and comforting. And so often a frightened animal will run right to or make their way right to the magnet dog for a sense of protection.
I see. I thought that would be interesting. What if we have magnet people? Is there a way to become a magnet person?
Yes, I think there is. I think there is. And it requires a compassion and an empathy and a willing to see from somebody else's point of view.
Yeah, it's a beautiful idea.
Also a capacity to listen.
To listen, right? And also to be empathetic. And I
to
guess
meet people where they are.
Exactly. And also, I guess, to give people comfort.
Mm-hmm.
Because
yes.
I'm thinking of dogs, they give comfort, they give love. You said they're patient too, right?
Yes.
Like they're waiting for you constantly, like at the door. Right? It's kind of crazy.
You are my favorite person every time you come in. Yes.
Now, is there a way we can do that? I mean, we're not that patient as human beings, right?
Right.
So we need to learn that little bit of that.
Mm-hmm.
Love University, we talk about loving energy, you know, for ourselves and others. But part of love is patience, you know, and also kindness. And those things are rare in our society. But, you know, this is a great example. Yeah, I really admire the work you're doing. You're doing a wonderful thing, you know, with animals. You're helping people. You're helping animals. You're bringing everyone together. Where can people learn more about your information? Do you have books and seminars you do?
Well, yes, I have 3 books out, and all of them are available to be found on SusannaCharlson.com.
Yes.
I write for Houghton Mifflin Harcourt, so I'm also available on their publisher website. But and I've got a Facebook presence, Susanna Charlson Author, and I encourage people to reach out to me.
Exactly.
I'd love to talk to them.
What's your website again, Susanna?
SusannaCharlson.com.
That's simple enough. Okay,
easy.
Beautiful. All right.
Yes.
It's been a pleasure. Well, I'd love to have you on again.
Thanks
for coming to the book fair.
Take care.
Until next time.
Thank you.
Okay. So, Love University students, if you have any questions, you can email us at loveuniversitylove@gmail.com, 310-226-8090. Visit us at loveuniversity.love. Like us on Facebook at Love University Podcast. Follow us on Twitter and Instagram at @LoveUPodcast. Until next time, Love University students, put away your notepads, your books, your iPads. And this is Dr. Alex Avila.